Another week goes by in football, and once again, VAR takes centre stage. A potentially title-defining moment in the Premier League, decided not on the pitch, but on a screen. And just days later in Scotland, another huge controversial decision, a penalty that left the title race on a knife edge. So why does it feel like VAR, and maybe not referees, are now deciding who wins and loses titles? And if fans don't want it, why is it still here? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and these are big moments with huge consequences. And once again, VAR right at the centre of them. West Ham thought they had this crucial goal in the last minutes of a game, potentially changing their hopes of staying in the Premier League. But after a lengthy review, nearly 6 minutes, it was ruled out. A decision that may hand Arsenal its first league title in over 20 years. Days later in Scotland, there was another major call, a penalty that put the race between Hearts and Celtic on a knife edge. And on Saturday, that title, well, it was more or less decided. So this is the question now. Not whether VAR gets decisions right, but how much influence it should have. Because increasingly it feels like titles, not just matches, are actually being decided by process, not play. And yet, despite all of the frustration amongst fans, VAR isn't going anywhere. Well, to discuss all of this, I'm joined by football writer Jonathan Wilson. And returning to News Talk Daily is Off the Ball's own David Wilson. You are both so very welcome to the podcast. David, I'm going to come to you first, right? I'm not the biggest football fan in the world, but I do love those big matches. And I was watching that match between Arsenal and West Ham last week. For people that don't know, can you explain what VAR is and why there were calls for it in the first place all those years ago?
Yeah, it was brought in originally because they felt that the technology couldn't be avoided. And incidents like, famously, in an Irish context, the Thierry Henry handball that happened in 2009, where he handled the ball, he plays the ball across to William Gallas. France win the game, go to the 2010 World Cup, Ireland don't go.
I can't believe you brought that up already.
I know.
We get about 10 seconds into this podcast.
I know.
Before we talk about Thierry Henry and his bleeding hand.
Yeah, and that kind of accelerated the conversation around me. Well, we could see, everyone could see it on a television camera, everyone could see it in the studio after the game. That's basically why VAR was brought in for a huge instance like that. Now, because of the technology and there's so many cameras and there's so many things, you know, money, financial things, trophies, legacies on the line, that every decision now is being analysed to the nth degree. You know, originally there was Stepladder was against the implementation of video assistant referees. He put actually officials beside the goals in UEFA context in kind of before, and in 2013, 2014, where we had an official beside the goal, and that was the kind of to combat against goal line technology. Then that was done away with, and then Gianni Infantino comes in, and then there's a directive that we're going to move to kind of video assistant referees. And the 2018 World Cup was a good example where it was kind of rushed in, and then since that we've had it rolled out across the top five leagues in Europe, and then I think maybe all but one of the 30 top leagues in Europe use VAR. So it's kind of become an intrinsic part of the game at the top level. We can't get away from it, and it's there to eradicate mistakes and minimise, and the best way to kind of put it was minimum interference, maximum benefit. And that's what David Ellery, former Premier League referee, and he was a former IFAB technical director, that's what he said in 2017, and that's not been the case since it's been brought in.
Do you think it could work better as a system?
No, I actually don't think it can work any better at all, because
Ultimately, this is it. This is at its limitations.
Yeah, ultimately, you're trying to get 100% accuracy on what are subjective decisions. I'll have a different view on the Celtic Hearts handball than what Johnny down the road has, you know, on that major incident last week. You can't get like ultimate kind of uniformity across anything like this. Like, football is different. There are things in football that are immeasurable. It's not cricket where there's like a line call, or tennis where there's, you know, there's an umpire and then there's Hawkeye and you can challenge and you can see if the ball hits the line, or if the ball's pitching, you know, in cricket then off towards the stumps, then it, you know, you can, that's measurable. You can tell that that's going to happen, like that will happen. Football is not like that. Football is a game based on feelings. It's based a game on, you hear players and describe like the smell of a game, the referees kind of referee the game on a basis that there is, they have to make a decision very quickly and then we move on. But now, because of the implementation of VAR, well, we have 15 cameras to look at a microscopic incident. And if you look at even the conversation around some of the decisions this year, Roberto Rossetti is a UEFA director of refereeing, and in a European context he's saying that we become too microscopic when it comes to analysing every decision. So like, for example, at the weekend in the Premier League, you'll watch a game and there'll be the referee will put his hand up, and you know, when you're watching on the screen, you know that okay, there's a VAR check for something. You might know what it is immediately, but you know there's a check for something. That is not what football is about. That's not what the game was about originally. And we kind of managed to, you know, go along for 130 years without technology to analyze every second decision. You know, every fan thinks there's a conspiracy against their club. They think that there's and that's just the modern world that we live in, though. We think that, you know, because of the, we're in the era of AI where we find it hard to trust news, we find it hard to trust politicians, we find it hard to trust refereeing, we find it hard to trust people in authority. And that trust has been eroded and it's been corrosive, not just in football and sport, but across kind of the world in general. So I don't know, like, we might get an increase of where we come to the correct decision. Like, that's obvious because offside is clear. Like, you're either offside or you're not. Now, it could be very minimal. Mm-hmm. You know, the hair
in
your
millimeters.
Yeah, like the hair in your kneecap can be the ultimate decider between offside and onside. But it is, that's the rule. Whereas it comes to whether it's a bad tackle or a pull in the box, or if it's like potential handball. Like, football is a game where you kind of referee on vibes, and that's what maybe when it was at its best.
So is that your biggest problem then with it? Is that yeah, emotional release when a goal generally has been scored, that all of that has been eroded, that the experience of the game isn't being enhanced?
Yeah.
Do you find that?
Yeah.
I find that when I'm watching it, I hate that. You're like, oh my God, they've equalised. And then you have that, or have they? Is that going to be allowed? And then, so immediately within a split second, unless goal's really obvious, you have that pause, oh, they are allowing it, and then the excitement's just not quite the same.
No, it's not. Like, even if you're a West Ham fan looking at that Arsenal decision last week, like, you scored the goal, but immediately you think, oh, what's happened there? What's the, you know, could there be a foul? Like, the spontaneity, there's no better feeling than your team scoring a goal. It's not a feeling that you can replicate in kind of any other walk of life. It's something kind of out of the blue, or it's a feeling of like, yeah, it's an endorphin hit that is different to everything you do within other facets of your life.
But there's no worse feeling as a fan than when you see something like the Thierry Henry decision and you're like, if VAR was there, he wouldn't have got away with that.
I don't know. Yeah, I know.
I'm confused on this one. I can't decide.
But even when you say that, like, mistakes ultimately were part of the game and you kind of got on with it. And people's tolerance for mistakes in not just sport, but in political life, in everything, is in media, of course, as well. Like, we know, like, people's tolerance for mistakes is less and less.
There is truth in that.
And
the old addicted to outrage.
Exactly, yeah. And like, even when we consume, like, most people consume football through the television now. If you look at like the League of Ireland is obviously increasing its popularity, and it's a brilliant product now to what it was maybe 20, 30 years ago. But people are going to League of Ireland games because there's no VAR. Well, not just one single reason, but that's part of it, because
it feels like old-fashioned football.
Yeah, exactly. You can go and be a St. Pat's fan, they score a goal and you celebrate it, and you know that there's no VAR to intervene.
So should it be introduced here?
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Do you think there'd be huge resistance to it?
I think there would be. I think like Sweden is a very good example, where Sweden is a league where the clubs are majority owned by the fans and they've voted against the implementation of VAR and the introduction of VAR. Now, Sweden is a very kind of strong fan football culture, and we have that here in Ireland as well. And it's maybe something that we didn't really realize until the last 10, 15 years.
No, but it's growing all the time.
It's growing all the time, and people love the going to games on a Friday night. Like, it's a lot more accessible. Like, the Premier League is, you know, it goes on for ages. It could be 106 minutes. There's like 10 minutes of added time because you've had all these VAR checks. It's not what the game was meant to be. The game was meant to be fast, quick. It was meant to be, you know, not based off a set piece. It's not rugby. It's not NFL. And if you want like set piece based sports, you probably go and watch them.
If the technology is here to stay, right, and it looks like it is in the Premiership, what needs to change, do you think, to make it work better for fans? Or is there anything that can change?
I don't know if there's a whole pile that can change. Like, it can... For example, if you look at Manchester United, they have just like two screens at both sides of Old Trafford, and it'll just say VAR check, and they won't, they'll just say, they'll give the line while checking potential penalty, or and then the referee will come on the mic and he'll say, this is why the penalty was given, or the free kick was given, or the red card, whatever it is. There's still that kind of, that the match going experience for fans still supersedes what should be the television experience, because there was so much money being pumped in by television companies and media companies. The product has been more kind of geared towards their experience. It should be geared back towards the match going experience. And I don't know how the implementation of VAR, how you improve it. I don't know how that kind of happens without something major changing, and I don't see something major changing. Like, ultimately, the VAR officials, the referees, they're human beings, they're going to make errors. On Friday morning, we had five examples of five incorrect VAR decisions over the last couple of weeks in the Premier League. Five. And that's huge. Whereas, like, I think one of them was in the Everton-Man City game. Everton and Man City was 3-3 at the time the incident. It was for an Everton penalty. Everton could have went 4-2 up at the stage of the game, and then the Premier League title race could have been over a week ago. So it's one of those things where, even with VAR, we're still not getting decisions right. I think there needs to be maybe an abolition of it, and we just go back to where we were, because what's the point in using this technology when we're still not getting to right decisions, or we're still having incorrect decisions anyway?
All right, Jonathan, you are very welcome to News Talk Daily. So, VAR, the whole idea behind it was that it would make refereeing more consistent, right? You would just have this objective voice that would almost always call it right. Has that happened, or has it actually made it kind of more complicated?
Well, I think if you look purely at what percentage of decisions I got right, it probably has gone up. But I think the costs of that have been enormous. And we are absolutely nowhere near 100% accuracy. And I also think actually 100% accuracy is impossible, because I think a lot of football's laws have these grey areas in them. A lot of them are to do with subjective interpretation. But the problem is, people think, oh, VAR will give us this all-seeing eye and everything will be clear and we will all agree, yes, that was right and this was the correct decision. But actually, we're absolutely nowhere near that. And I think we see that particularly after the West Ham Arsenal case, where there seems a general consensus the referee did get it right, and yet everybody's still really unhappy about it and crying conspiracy.
And that's the thing, isn't it, that you say? It hasn't reduced the controversy, actually. It's actually reshaped the controversy into something that is arguably a bit more toxic.
I would agree entirely, yeah. It's made it more insidious, because previously, you accepted, in the same way you accept a goalkeeper might make a mistake, a manager might make a mistake, a centre forward might miss a chance, you accepted referees are human, and somebody aged between, I don't know, 38 and 45, running at speed, looking through a crowd of bodies, trying to work out what's going on, their view necessarily will not be 100% accurate. Plus, and I think that then makes it easier to accept the subjectivity of it. Whereas you think, well, hang on, they've got however many cameras, 15 cameras, 20 cameras. They're watching the replays of this over and over again. And therefore, if the decision doesn't go the way of your team, fans are want to cry conspiracy and assume, this isn't just that my interpretation of the law, my interpretation of this incident is different to those officials. It's they are cheating us. So we're now in this absurd situation where I think all 20 Premier League clubs, and I'm sure people in Scotland or Germany or Spain or Italy or France or wherever would say the same. They all believe, or sections of all of those fan bases, believe there is conspiracy against them, which obviously can't be true. You can't have a conspiracy against all 20 teams in the league. And yet that is now the broader feeling and the accusations being made against officials.
Yeah, and I saw that in particular after the West Ham Arsenal game, which I was watching at the time and looking on social media afterwards, which really accelerated this idea that there's bias there, that there's manipulation there, and it all became really tribal and back to that idea of being quite toxic, quite corrosive, that undermines kind of maybe the trust that was there in the past. We're all human, we're making mistakes, but it's not more than that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look at that incident, the goal that Callum Wilson had disallowed, There's a corner.
One forward now for West Ham, including their goalkeeper, Madsen Manson. It's up towards him.
And it doesn't help that Arsenal have scored a lot of goals from corners this season.
Raya didn't get there. Was that blocked on the line?
And in a lot of instances, if you look at the video, in a crowded box, you could find an offence being committed. And in many cases, it's been waved through. In this instance, you have David Raya, the Arsenal goalkeeper. He is being pulled by Jean-Claude Todibo, the West Ham centre-back. And you see his shirt being pulled. And what we now learned is referees love shirt pulls because they're really obvious. That's not subjective. You can see that. However, that's not what the goal is disallowed for. So he's then sort of slower than he would like to be, I think, in coming towards the ball. At the same time, you have the Arsenal forward, Leandro Trossard, pushing Pablo, the West Ham forward, towards the goalkeeper. Pablo's arm sort of goes out to brace himself as Trossard is pushing him. And that arm then goes across the sort of upper chest and neck of Raya. And then his arm, so that left arm, so it does sort of grip on the shoulder and pull him down. And it's that the goal is disallowed for, that pulling down. And if you look at just a 2-second clip, or if you look at the still photo, it looks really bad. It looks really obvious. This is clearly a foul. If you look at a 5-second clip, you see, well, hang on, he's only in that position because Trossard has fouled him by pushing him backwards. At the same time, you know, if you look at the whole box, you can see 3 or 4 other fouls being committed by both sides. Mm-hmm. So which one takes precedence? Do you go with the first one? Do you go with the more serious offence? Do you say, well, actually, Raya, the goalkeeper in this instance, he's the key player. You know, he's the one who's going to catch the ball. So he's the one that's sort of it's most impactful, it's most direct influence. We penalise the foul on him. And you look at the regulations, and to be honest, they're really not clear on that. But on some sort of core footballing level, me as a football fan who's been watching football for 40-odd years, it sort of feels like they did get the decision right. However, it took them 6 minutes to get to that decision. It's clearly not a decision that satisfied people. And given that we're still not really happy with the decision, is that 6-minute delay worth it? And you'll get people say, well, the VAR is meant to intervene. And the phrase is, if there's a clear and obvious error. Well, if it takes you 6 minutes and it takes you multiple camera angles, clearly it's not clear and obvious. I don't think it matters whether it takes a minute or 6 minutes. Once you stop the game, you've lost that spontaneous explosion of emotion that you get with a goal, which I think is crucial to the match-going experience. And if you're going to stop the game, you might as well get the decision right. My issue is, I think, that loss of spontaneity, that loss of humanity, if you like, the sense that this is a man trying to make a decision, the cost of that is too great, given that we are not reaching a decision which people find satisfactory, even when it's right.
And funny enough, I was watching a programme on Sky Sports last, I think it was Thursday night, Michael Owens was hosting it, and he had one of the VAR officials on the programme, and they were replaying that clip, and the VAR official was talking about the impact. Look, there's impact here on the goalkeeper, and that's why we made the call, basically, that we did. And Michael Owens was asking him about all the other fouls that were clearly happening in the box, and why was the impact that they were having not been taken into consideration, or why was that not a foul? And he actually didn't really have an answer for that.
But it's a huge problem in the laws. What is the answer? I mean, we had an absurd situation earlier in the season in a game between Fulham and Manchester United where two pretty much identical fouls were happening simultaneously in the middle of a 6-yard box. And a penalty ended up being given because for some reason, the Fulham foul on the Manchester United player took precedence over the Manchester United foul on the Fulham player. And that was really not clear either. And I actually don't know what you do. What is the law supposed to say if you have multiple fouls happening simultaneously? Mm. Which one do you penalise? I guess a logical thing would be to say you do them in chronological order. But imagine how long that would take to go through each offence. Well, okay, when does that actually start? What is the moment at which that contact between players becomes a foul? And you're having to compare 6 different incidents. I mean, that would then take not 6 minutes, but, you know, 20 minutes to sort out.
You might as well go to the bar. As a fan, you might as well go and put on the dinner, because, as you say, it just loses the whole momentum and the whole excitement of the game. Do you think fans have lost trust in the decisions more since VAR came in?
Yes, I think they have. I think the idea of an honest mistake has now disappeared. That anybody could understand, you know, even the most sort of one-eyed fan, where a decision hadn't gone his team's way, they could, when they calmed down, think, you know what, he's only a bloke. He's a, you know, a 45-year-old bloke who's 30 yards away. He's running. Maybe he didn't see it clearly. I can sort of accept that. But when you have all these angles and it still doesn't go your way, that feels like something much more insidious. And that, I think, really corrodes trust in the officials. And you often say people, you hear people say, oh, you know, it's not the technology, it's not VAR itself, it's the people using it. Well, if that's true, why does it happen in every single country? You know, are you really saying that you know, no country has got the people who are equipped to do this? Or is it just that no person will ever be equipped to do this because what you're doing is asking them to perform an impossible task? And I think it's not just the referees who've been exposed by this, it's the laws themselves. And we're seeing, if football was a game, but one of the great beauties of it was that the 12 laws were drawn up in 1863, fundamentally still provide the basis of our game now. And that first sort of 15 or 20 years were quite a few tweaks as you know, they ironed out some teething problems. But basically from the end of the 19th century to now, there's only been two major changes to the laws, one in the offside law in 1925, one to the back pass law in 1992. But now we're seeing the laws being rewritten every year. The handball law's gone from being, I think it was 16 words, and it's now over 100 words, as they try to define exactly what handball is. And previously, it sort of relied on, everybody kind of knows what handball is. We don't have to define it. There's just sort of this sense of, yeah, that is handball, that's not. And then you get incidents like the one that happened in the Motherwell Celtic game, which had a huge bearing on the Scottish title race.
Final push here from Celtic to try and win this game here at Fir Park. Trusty's gone down holding his face. Motherwell with a player down too. John Beaton has been told to come over to the VAR screen by Andrew Dallas, and look at this again.
I wonder whether it's a hand, that raised hand, the arm up, the left arm.
There's the verdict. Penalty! Kelechi Iheanacho!
My reaction watching on TV was is it for the elbow on Austin Trusty? Surely that can't be a foul. Even the commentators were saying the same thing. It was only when you saw it for the third time, you realised, oh, actually, the ball's probably hit his hand. But the hand is right in front of the forehead. It probably brushes the arm. I'm still not entirely 100% convinced it touches the arm at all. It doesn't make a material difference at all, given the ball was clearly going to hit his forehead and does hit his forehead. Do we really want huge decisions like that would have a material impact on the title race being given when I'm 100% certain that would not have been given in the pre-VAR era?
Oh, that's interesting. So you think that decision wouldn't have been made but for VAR. So if it's not necessarily the technology that you can specify, this is the problem, it's the rules that are the problem, it is the way it's been used that is the problem. If it's not specifically one of those, is it just VAR is the problem and the game would be better off without it?
I would say so, yes. I mean, it was brought in, I think, under discussion, under trialed, as most things, to be honest, in modern football are. That basically was brought in for the 2018 World Cup by Gianni Infantino. I think in retrospect, I admit nobody was saying this at the time, he was doing it to highlight that his FIFA presidency was a new era. So he'd come in 2017, Sepp Blatter had been deposed in 2015 with all the various corruption scandals. And Infantino, he was confirmed as president in 2017. And Blatter had been very, very anti the use of video technology. And I think this was part of Infantino saying, no, there's a new world now. And this is probably subconscious rather than a conscious decision he was making. But it was Infantino saying, I accept scrutiny. I want things to be reviewed. I want things to be looked at very closely. Now, as it turns out, that has not been the case in political terms. And trying to do it in footballing terms, I think, is been really deleterious to the experience. And I think it's also the other thing I think is worth saying, and it's maybe this is just a change that was always going to happen, but it feels unnerving to somebody of my age who grew up going to football, that if you're watching on TV, it's not actually that bad. You know, you see the replays, you're trying to make your own mind up, the commentators talking about, the punters talking about, you can at times you learn what the VAR officials are saying. and you're trying to work out, oh, is he going to give that? Is that a penalty? Is that offside? Whatever. If you're on the ground, if you paid your £100 for ticket, you haven't a clue. You're just sitting there waiting. And to be honest, as a journalist, I wasn't aware just how weird a thing that was, because the football I went to watch as a fan was in the Championship, whether you don't have VAR, and every other game I went to, I was sitting in a press box, you have the monitor, so we're watching the replays as well. And then I was at a game in the second Bundesliga, so the German second division, between Fortuna Düsseldorf and Greuther Fürth. And there was what appeared to be a brilliant overhead kick scored by Fortuna Düsseldorf. The whole crowd goes mad. It's a really passionate atmosphere. Everybody's celebrating. And then you realize, oh, hang on, they haven't kicked off yet. What's going on? There's no announcement. There's nothing on the screens. There's no way of knowing what's happening. And 5 minutes later, this goal's ruled out. And I honestly still don't know why it was ruled out. I mean, look, I could have gone to a newspaper the next day and found out. But nobody in the stadium told you in any way what was going on. And so fans in the stadiums have this wait, but not knowing what is being looked at, what people on TV are seeing. And so I think VAR is maybe the most obvious manifestation of this shift in spectatorship from it being a match-going experience to a TV watching experience. And now I think is a fundamental shift that we haven't quite factored in just how significant that is.
Jonathan, thanks so much for speaking to us today.
Cheers, thank you.
Two huge football fans here speaking on News Talk Daily today, both saying VAR out.
Yeah.
Technology out.
Yeah.
Old-fashioned football needs to be preserved at all costs.
Yeah.
David and Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk Daily. You can check out Jonathan's most recent book, The Power and the Glory, The History of the World Cup, or his Substack, Wilson's World of Football. And of course, you can always catch David on Off the Ball's Green Sin. Love to know what you think. Do you want to keep VAR? Is it ruining the game? Or is the rot, in fact, actually much deeper? Drop me an email, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. Until tomorrow morning, goodbye.